I didn't realize that my trauma was holding me back from experiencing something so beautiful like motherhood. I logically thought this was my decision, and I justified it in very logical reasons why I don't want to be a mother. And so imagine how deep, how hidden the trauma response can be, and it really can affect your life decisions and life choices. And so I share my message for that reason, that it is so important for every person to go and seek healing and really work through their traumatic experiences, because in their PTSD, because you don't even know what you don't know.
You are now listening to the podcast where authors inspire listeners to become authors, the Going North Podcast. I'm your host, certified self-leadership trainer, best-selling author, and book enthusiast, Dom Brightman. And you're going to be listening to a different author that will inspire you to join the business of immortality, known as authorship. Now let the fun begin. New episode, new review to highlight, and this one was left on the Apple Podcast app, a 5-star review via the wonderful user Nick at Night. Reminds that good old channel Nickelodeon. Anyways, short review. Great show! Going North offers so much on this show, it doesn't disappoint. Thanks a bunch, Nick at Night, for letting us know that you enjoyed it and that we don't disappoint. We definitely don't want to disappoint you, because we want to keep launching out great content. And speaking of great content, let's get on with today's episode. And today on the Highlight Reel Builder for Authors, known as the Going North Podcast, we got another super special, awesome human for you today, my friends, courtesy of one of the best websites on planet Earth, known as Podmatch.com, the wonderful site where podcast guests get to connect with podcast hosts, and if they're cool, they're freaking in. And today's guest is cooler than freaking two cucumbers, indeed. That's right, indeed. Because she's a fellow child of the king, y'all. That's right, indeed. It's always great when we have fellow Christians on the podcast who join the business of immortality by publishing a book or two or many. Because today's wonderful guest, not only is she a fellow child of the king and a best-selling author, she's also a professional speaker, a certified coach, advocate for the homeless, as well as a board member of a wonderful organization, and the founder, y'all. She found something, the founder of the Christian Professionals Network Worldwide. So hear that right, folks. The whole earth is going to get it, y'all. The earth is not ready. That's right, indeed. It's not ready, indeed. Whether it's pancake or globe, they ain't ready, y'all. You love to see it. So let's give it up for the Miss AM in the AM, the amazing and marvelous Anna Megrelishvili. How you doing today, Anna?
Oh, amazing. I think this was the best introduction I have ever received in any interviews that I have done. Like, I am blushing right now.
Oh, sweet. Well, my mission is completed. All right, as I'm talking about. Got the guest to blush today. Hooray. All right.
All right. I'm like, stay humble, Anna. Stay humble.
That's cool. It's all good in the neighborhood. Indeed, it's all good neighborhood tea. Because, yeah, life humbles everybody, whether they like it or not.
It's true. That's why we, you know, it's important to stay humble. Otherwise, life and God will be really quick to humble you.
Yeah, exactly. You wake up one day and you feel like you got bunny ears on your head, and you wonder, like, where the heck these bunny ears come from? And then you get tackled by Ray Lewis, and it's like, oh, he had a PTSD flashback where he thought he was on the field again, and it's like, oh crap, I got tackled by him. Like, darn. Like, how'd he get through my entire freaking house? He left a hole in the wall after he come too quick.
Hopefully this is not a true story that you were recalling.
Oh no, I'm still alive. I'm up. It's not real.
Oh my goodness. Well, I'm so thrilled to be on your podcast. Thank you so much for having me and allowing me to share my story with your audience.
No, sure. No sweat. You're on my radar for a while. I was like, oh, your profile's freaking interesting. I'll just go ahead and pin that for later. Next thing I know, get a pitch. I'm like, oh, hello. All right. She's an automatic yes. That's what I'm talking about, indeed.
Well, hey, speaking of story, I'm probably not allowed to mention during the introduction because it'll probably be, I don't know, metaphorically 5 days, and I probably forgot metaphorical 4.5 days of what makes the amazing honor that she is. So am I filling in any cavities I may have missed about you?
Well, I think you pretty much covered it, but of course, this is just what you can put on the resume. And the story behind is really, you know, just incredible. I feel really blessed just because I went from being an atheist to having a just incredible supernatural encounter with God in October of 2020. So my life has been completely transformed. So if you were to meet me less than 5 years ago, my resume would have been completely different. And I was just an ordinary person who was really putting wealth acquisition as the number one priority for my life goal. And then everything was put upside down in my life. And I never thought I would write a book. That was never my dream or goal. I never thought I would found something. I never really cared about homelessness as an issue. And so all of the things I'm doing now, it's really recent. So it's, you know, when we say you get reborn when you become a follower of Jesus, like that's literally how I feel. I feel like my entire life has been just wiped away from what I used to be and what I used to do versus who I am today and what I do today.
That's what I'm talking about indeed. That's what I'm talking about indeed. You love to see it indeed. And the funny thing is, you're one of those rarities. You're actually one of those folks who actually lived in the country of Georgia, and now you're living in Georgia.
That's true. It gets very confusing for a lot of people. So I have to always, I guess, clarify. I'm from the country Georgia in Eastern Europe, and now I live in Atlanta, Georgia in the United States. Just a coincidence, but it's a fun coincidence that always is a conversation starter for sure. But it also is interesting because, you know, I've lived in the U.S. since 2008, and it almost feels like I've lived so far like three different lives. So I divide my life of the first part of upbringing in Eastern Europe, and I had an incredibly challenging childhood. I mean, you talk about experiencing hunger, stealing food because of hunger. My father sexually abused me since I was a child. There was alcoholism, drug issues in my family. So a lot of just really difficult internal battles within my family. And then also, even though I'm from Georgia, the country, my family and I lived in Moscow, Russia for 10 years as immigrants. And that period of time in the 90s was a very challenging period after the collapse of the Soviet Union. Lots of just racism toward people who were not Russia born. And so had to experience a lot of racism growing up in Russia as well. And so, you know, just very, very broken upbringing. And then had this goal just to escape that life. And U.S. has become like my dream come true. And so I came as a student. So I got a full scholarship to go to college in the U.S. And then I got a scholarship to do my MBA and then had a really successful corporate career for many years. And so that's kind of the second part of my life where really wealth acquisition became my God. And the third part is what I'm living right now. And that's, like I mentioned, after I encountered God and just eventually gave my life to Jesus, everything has changed. So it really feels like I've lived so much life in such a short period of time. And it always surprises people who meet me now and know what I do and the work that I do in our community to learn that I come from just very abusive background, that I was atheist most of my life, didn't really know God. And now my life is completely different.
Different indeed, different indeed. That's what I'm talking about indeed. That's right indeed. Yeah, because I remember reading part of your story. I think it was the anthology one where you basically became an exchange student, and then you had to get a full ride scholarship. So do you feel like that whole process, I guess, over that 3-year period helped you during your time of sales when you eventually found a sales job?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, imagine. So I came to the US for the first time when I was 16 for 1 year as an exchange student. And that's when I, for the first time, actually saw what a healthy family should look like. Imagine I grew up and everybody around me was absolutely dysfunctional. I never knew what a happy, loving family looks like. And suddenly I see my host mother, who has equal voice. She's treated with respect. She basically is an equal partner in marriage. And I was like, wow, like this is what I want. And this is where I want to come back. And then I went back to Georgia because of the visa requirement. And I wasn't allowed to come back to the US for 2 years. And so I started university in Georgia. But in the meanwhile, in back of my head, I was like, I need to do anything I can to come back to the US. Well, I grew up very poor. My family was poor. There was no way I could have come to the US unless I got a full scholarship. And so I only applied to one college. It's a small liberal arts college at Berea, Kentucky. And it's very unique because every single student who goes there is on a full scholarship. So it's very, very difficult to get into it. And I just feel so blessed that I was one of the 10% of the exchange students that get selected worldwide, and they covered all of my expenses. And so that's how I was able to come to the US. And I chose a business degree because for that reason, I said, what is the most versatile degree that I can get that I can basically do pretty much anything after graduation? And I fell into sales. And then I realized that if you're really, really good in sales, you can make a lot of money. And I was really, really good in sales and I made a lot of money. And so I had this dream, American dream, right? Like my dream was I wanted to buy this beautiful condo in the middle of the city. And so I've been working for over 10 years toward that goal. And finally, I accomplished it. And I bought my condo in Atlanta, Georgia in March of 2020. Well, you know what happened in March of 2020. So I closed on March 2nd. And 2 weeks later, the whole country shut down. And at that point, my entire condo was demolished because I decided I wanted to renovate it and make it look like my dream house, right? And so poured in thousands of dollars into it. And then I walk into the condo that's completely, you know, demolished and getting ready to be renovated as the COVID hit. And I was like, have I made the biggest mistake of my life? Like, talk about like your dream crushed. Luckily, I had all of my materials pre-ordered. So the construction was finished in time. So I move into my beautifully renovated condo. And I remember about a month went by and I was sitting on my couch in the morning drinking coffee. And this thought crosses my mind. And I was like, well, now what? I can't continue living this way. Like I worked so hard to achieve this dream only to be happy for 30 days. And then again, that feeling of emptiness was there. Now, back then, of course, I didn't know that the feeling of emptiness that I felt was the lack of knowing God. And so I tried to fill that empty void with acquisitions like my condo. Well, we all know that this is all temporary. And that was the lesson, I guess, for me back then. And I was like, there has to be more to life. I cannot continue doing the same thing over and over and over again. And so I think that was the turning point, because that thought was just growing and kind of circulating in my head. And fast forward to October of 2020, I woke up in the middle of the night and never before prayed. But for some reason that night, I was compelled to pray. And so I didn't know how to pray. So I said something like, God, if you exist, why do I keep feeling this way? What's my purpose? There has to be more to life than this, something like that. And unexpectedly, I hear a voice in my room, like not inside of me, but outside of me, like audible voice that says, go to the store, prepare food, feed the hungry. Of course, freak out, like pinching myself, like, am I dreaming? I'm very, very logical person. And so I'm analyzing what happened. And I was like, no, I didn't dream this, like this happened. But then somehow I forced myself to go back to sleep and said, I'm going to deal with this in the morning. So I go to sleep. The next morning I wake up and I feel like something did happen last night. Like there's just this nagging feeling that I have to fulfill this message. So I call into work and say, I can't come in today. I have to take a personal day. And I go to the store. I purchase different supplies, come back home, and I make 24 bags of lunches. Now, there's a lot of homeless population in the downtown area of Atlanta. And so I get in my car and I start driving toward downtown Atlanta. And then basically for the next hour, when I saw somebody in the street, I would stop, offer them lunch, and then kept going for about an hour. So then I come across this large group of homeless hanging out together. So I park my car and I count how many people are sitting in the street. And then I count how many bags I have left in my big bag of lunches. And I had exact number of lunches left. And I was like, well, that's really bizarre. So I take the whole big bag, walk over there and say, hey, guys, I prepared some lunches. Would you like some? Everybody was happy, gave them all out. So I thought, okay, I'm done for the day. I fulfilled my message. And I was about to get in my car. And then suddenly one of the homeless ladies calls me and she says, honey, come over here. I have something for you. So I walk over there and she looks at me with this big smile and she says, I have a gift for you. And then she has this big bag of all of her belongings. And so she's looking and looking and looking for this gift she wants to give me. Finally, she pulls this bird made of clay and like a little statuette, and she gives it to me. And so I look at it and it's a sparrow. And on its chest, it was written, now in God's hands. When I read that message, it felt like this, just some sort of like energy struck my heart and I just burst into tears. So I quickly got in my car because I was embarrassed and I'm sobbing, like sobbing uncontrollably. And the only message that's going through my head was, God is real. God is real. God is talking to me. And so this message just keeps going and I'm sobbing and I'm driving home. And then I get home and I literally order my first Bible from Amazon. And that's the day that completely transformed my life.
Sweet. That's what I'm talking about, Dave. So talking about indeed. That's right. Did you leave any of your car doors open, like unlocked or something? Like when you realized you had the same amount of lunches for the start of the day?
I mean, it was really interesting because I didn't think about anything. My safety, like it's probably was not very safe for me to do what I did as just a lone female, like, you know, but I didn't care. I just was there to fulfill this message. And I think my heart was just so hardened back then that God knew that the only way for him to wake me up was to do something so drastic like he did. And that was the voice in the middle of the night. Because back then I was just so logical. Anything less than that, I would have probably discarded and never followed his voice. And then I think, you know, we'll get to the part of what I do now, but I think God did this on purpose that I knew him through somebody who was experiencing homelessness. Because if you think about it, the world considers homeless as bottom of the societal pyramid, right? They're often forgotten, discarded. people don't like looking at them. And yet this woman who our society considers to be at the bottom of the bottom, she saved my soul. And so I think it's a beautiful message that God has sent, that look at importance of every single person alive. They're still my daughters and my sons, and they're made in my image. And this woman has saved my soul, transformed my life, and look at the trickling effect it has with all the work that I'm doing now with the homeless. And I think it's like this full circle, because I didn't know back then that my purpose was to help solve homelessness issue in our country. But then God knew how he needed to craft this beautiful story so that I can share it with the audience and say, look how it all comes together. I was saved by the homeless. My purpose is to help them. And then it just all comes together.
Ah, together indeed. Because yeah, it's a lot of folks out there. It's like, hey, it's that classic saying for folks, if you hear personal finance or just regular conversation, folks be like, yep, there's a lot of folks out there, they're one paycheck away that they're not getting from homelessness, or some case houselessness, because some folks be like, yeah, I ain't got no house, but my home is my car. It's like, okay,
exactly.
Yeah, and it's really rough out there. The numbers just keep growing indeed. So my goodness, so what are you doing now in addition to, I guess, the lunches? I'm guessing that's part of your network to help out homelessness with the problem of helping solving that in the country.
So, you know, it was interesting because, let me back up a little bit. So how God showed me that I needed to do this work was through me quitting my corporate job. I went on this year-long sabbatical to search God's wisdom, and I started going on silent retreats. And so during my first silent retreat, I actually wrote my book, Finding Courage to Change, in 2 days. So it really felt like this divine download that I have just put down on paper. And that was just an incredible experience, because I never thought I would write a book. That's not something I ever wanted or dreamed of. It just kind of happened. And then during my second silent retreat is when I received this really a download of vision, I guess. It really felt like the slideshow that just kind of hit me during a prayer and meditation, where I saw the business plan of everything that I'm doing now. And back then it was really overwhelming, because I felt like I was unworthy to fulfill such a big mission to solve homelessness in the US. But then, you know, you think about people in the Bible, how many times people in the Bible have been asked by God to fulfill a certain mission that they felt unprepared for, and yet that they said yes, and then God was with them. And so I said, okay, if this was a 5-year plan, how would I do it? And I started with actually the networking side of Christian professionals. So I started gathering Christian professionals to meet and network with each other for the purpose of philanthropy, because I felt like each of us has a sphere of influence. And sometimes we're so caught up in our own world that we forget that there's so many people who are in need and that we are called to help others as Christians. And so for a whole year, we gathered and we featured different nonprofits. We did a lot of service projects in the community. All meanwhile, I was really researching the topic of homelessness in the US, because back then I did not know anything about it. This is, you know, something that I was called to do. It was not necessarily something that I was originally very passionate about, but you just say, yes, Lord, when you get a mission. And so what I learned is that homelessness, the reason why people become homeless is not what most people think. It's not mental health issue. It's not abuse of drugs or alcohol. It's actually what's called relational poverty. And so I started researching this topic even further. And I learned that in the US, it's a significant problem and it's getting worse since after COVID. So the latest survey was done in 2019. This is before COVID. So I'm sure the numbers are worse now. But back in 2019, Americans were surveyed, and 1 in 5 Americans said that they experience loneliness and isolation. They don't have meaningful connections, and so they are relationally poor. Well, this is a significant issue for our country that not a lot of people talk about. There's a lot of different research, but basically, I'll tell you a couple of things that I think will give you an idea of the effect it has in our country and on our health. So one research basically said that experiencing loneliness and isolation is like smoking 10 cigarettes a day. That's the kind of health effect it has on a human. So imagine, like, because you're lonely, it's like you're a smoker. And then another one did productivity loss in our country because of loneliness. Because when you experience loneliness, you struggle with depression, you might be on different medication, there's health issues and all the different things that prevent you from being as productive as you can be. So they estimate that per year, our country loses about $9.5 billion in productivity because of loneliness and isolation. Now, let's go to your comment of our country has conservatively about 34 million Americans living paycheck to paycheck. So they're basically one paycheck away from not being able to pay their rent. And so when I looked at that statistic, what will determine who will become homeless and who will not between this population that's living paycheck to paycheck is whether they're relationally poor or not. So if they have family, friends, church community that they can go to in case of emergency to just help them, right, catch them when they fall, then they will be okay because there's going to be community around them to help them out. Well, what about those who have nobody? If something happens, loss of job, health issue, unexpected expenses, and they don't have anybody to help them, the chances of them becoming houseless is much, much higher. And you're absolutely correct, because a lot of homelessness in our country is what's called unseen homelessness, because we always think about chronically homeless people who we see in the streets when we imagine an image of the homeless. But like in the state of Georgia, that's only about 18% of the overall homelessness issue. The rest is what's called unseen homelessness. And those are the families who live in their cars, or they live in extended hotels, or they maybe are on somebody's couch, but yet they are homeless because they don't have their own house to live in. So this becomes a really, really significant issue. And so I started also looking at existing shelters, and they do a really good job at fulfilling physical needs, such as shelter, food. Many of them focus on job skills and making sure that they get you back out in the job market as soon as possible. And that is so important, and that is so great. But there is a recidivism rate between 30 to 70% of people getting out of homelessness and then within 5 years returning to homelessness. Well, why? And I think the piece that is missing is really fixing that relational poverty piece. And so that's when we come in. So the way that we help is we have a mentorship program for the homeless. So think about a program like Big Brothers Big Sisters, that's very well-known mentorship program in our country for the youth, have done a lot of research, a lot of great work proving that mentorship is one of the missing pieces and helpful tools for youth who is struggling with poverty to get out of poverty. Well, that's the same thing that is needed for the homeless. They need support system around them to help them, mentor them, making sure they know there's somebody who cares about them, encourages them, and they have a friend. The saddest statistic for me is that when most homeless are surveyed, they cannot put down even one emergency contact. And that is, to me, is devastating, because God has created us to live in the community. He does not want us to be isolated and alone. So the message that I'm sending with my conversations that I'm having, with the work that we're doing, is that they need us. Community building is what's going to help us uplift each other.
Woo-hoo, helping each other indeed. That's right indeed. Hopefully one day they'll update that study, because, yeah, post-pandemic loneliness, that must probably 10x'd.
It's pretty bad. And, you know, like my organization is expanding the networking. So we do a lot of different events. And you know, I see just people coming and they say, oh, we so need this. Like, we want to meet other professionals and just expand our circle and have more friends. And so that's really, really needed. And my vision is to expand this nationally, because if this is something that's needed in Atlanta, Georgia, well, it's also needed in other states and in other cities. So our vision is really to grow to every major city in the country within the next 10 years.
Sweet. You love to see it indeed. You love to see it indeed. That's right indeed. Yeah, I was surprised there when you passed the conversation where you're looking for a Christian business networking, like, I guess, organization. And it's like, wait, how are you in a Bible Belt and they ain't even one? Like, how's that? I know Atlanta is different from all the state of Georgia too, but still, it's like, come on. It's still the South here. How can there not be one? At least until you started one.
Well, there are some, but like some are, like, I'll give you an example. There's an organization called Faith Driven Entrepreneur, but that's only really for entrepreneurs, which is, as you know, maybe about 10% of the population. What about everybody else, right? And so I wanted to create something that is completely inclusive. So it's all denominations. It's interesting because we even have, you know, I would say 15% of people who come are not at all Christians. They come from different faiths, but because it's a business networking, it might be the first time they've been exposed to a Christian community. And so that also serves to me as the Great Commission of making more disciples, as opening this up for people who might be struggling with their faith or looking to explore Christianity. This is an easy way for them, a less intimidating way than maybe going to church, to be exposed to our faith and then to the community as well.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely indeed. One of those wonderful evangelism tools. You love to freaking see it indeed, because that's the other thing too. It's like, hey, it's like Christ himself. He went to where the sinners were and he sat with them and ate with them. He didn't like make eternal friends with them. He just stayed there and made friends with them. And then they eventually probably chose to follow him afterwards. So it's like, hey, name of the game, same thing.
Yeah, exactly. And then I want to normalize it for us to not just have our faith on Sundays, but really carry it with us in every single area of our lives. And I know that a lot of Christians feel very uncomfortable, you know, sharing their faith in the work setting. But to me, it's like you're hiding part of the biggest part of your personality and your who you are and your identity with people you work with. And so it's interesting because sometimes people come and they've told me, wow, this is the first time I was in this kind of business setting and I was able to talk about my faith and I was able to talk about things I'm struggling with. And I said, great. Like, let's normalize it. Let's have this as our everyday living, where we are not just Christians on Sundays, but we are 24/7 and we carry it with us everywhere.
That's right. If we're indeed, that's right indeed. I'm backtracking a bit because I remember you talking about the wonderful solar retreat. So out of curiosity, so did So was it so quiet over there that they could hear a pin drop, and if someone said a word, a Buddha smoke would pop out the bushes and throw you at the gate? Like, how would that even work? Did they, like, completely trust you? How does that work for the silent retreat?
Yeah, so I really think that every Christian should experience the practice of silent retreat at least once, because, you know, Jesus was our example of the silent retreats when he would go away in the wilderness and pray by himself in silence. It's the practice of really leaving the world behind and just being you and God and communing with God, and that's it. So the way it works, and it's in every state, there are monasteries, and I was really surprised how many there are. But basically, if you're somebody who's interested in exploring the practice of silent retreat, you can just Google, monastery, silent retreat. There's a lot of like Catholic or Jesuit monasteries, but it really doesn't necessarily matter what denomination they are, because nothing is forced upon you. Like, you're not forced to go to a Catholic mass unless you want to. So, but it really creates a prayerful environment, because every single person who's there is on silent retreat like you are. So the way it works, you check in, you have an orientation, and that's basically the last time you will be allowed to speak until after you are done with the retreat. And so you have your own room, your own bathroom. It's like kind of like dormitory style living. And again, there's masses and different services you can or attend, or you don't have to. And then they don't take your cell phone away, but they do ask you that you don't use your cell phone during the retreat and truly try to disconnect from the world. There's pre-made meals 3 times a day, so you don't have to worry about, you know, cooking or what am I going to eat. And so it truly allows you to completely shut the world and focus on just studying the Bible, praying, meditating. And even if you're not Christian and don't practice any specific religion, I still highly recommend it, because you don't realize how dependent you are on the phone, on being constantly bombarded by 100 messages every day. And suddenly you just slow down and you allow yourself to think and you allow yourself to have this active rest. This is a practice that I now have regularly. So in the last 2.5 years, I went on 8 silent retreats, actually. And so this is what allows me to really move my business a lot faster. It allowed me to write my book. It just really catapults you forward, because instead of going from A to B, meandering and just kind of going back and forth, it's a more straight shot, because you're tapping into God's wisdom and what he wants you to do with your life. And so it allows you to achieve it a lot faster.
Yeah, a lot faster indeed. Knocked out, I believe, what was that, your first book? 2 days, basically, right?
Yeah, I mean, the editing part of the book was way longer than writing the book. So that was interesting. It was an interesting experience overall. Just, I know it's not common experience for most authors, but yeah, I wrote it in 2 days. The title of the book came through, you know, a message. I had a vision for the cover of my book. So the cover came in the prayer and meditation. And so everything was kind of put together at that silent retreat. And then later on, I mean, it took me several months to go through and edit it, because, you know, it was very interesting. The last chapter of my book eventually became the first chapter of my book. So I almost like completely flip-flopped how I wrote it. But at the beginning, I really didn't focus on, I don't know, like grammar and how to structure every chapter. It was really just putting words on the paper and really like pouring everything that I had to say on the paper and then worrying about it later, which I think for me worked better, because I'm such a perfectionist. If I didn't do this way, I would never have finished that book.
I know the feeling indeed. Definitely the feeling indeed. It's like, yay, gotta get this wonderful David statue going here. It's like, it's gonna be perfect. Oh, crap, no. messed yep. it up. Like, darn it. No, I gotta get it right. So what you learned about yourself through the whole process of writing everything down like that?
You know, it was a very vulnerable experience because it was that month right before I was about to make the book go public and publish it. I mean, imagine, this is it. From now on, my story, everything I've gone through, my family story is public. I will never be a private person again. Everything is out there. And so it's a very, very vulnerable moment. And it was scary because I was like, am I making a mistake? Like, I don't know if people are going to judge me, because, you know, I talk about child sexual abuse in my book, and that's a very dark taboo topic in our country. And so, and not just in our country, I think it's worldwide. So not many people knew that about me, and suddenly it's completely public. But I'm so grateful that I had the courage to publish it, because since then, I even had some people who I've known for many years come to me and tell me, me too. That happened to me too. And suddenly, you know, we're part of this community who is working together to heal. And that's a very important part of healing, is not feeling alone and isolated and like, feeling like nobody understands you. And so this book has allowed me to use it as a tool to have a very difficult conversation and educate people about the topic, because there's this misconception that it only happens not in my neighborhood or not in my socioeconomic class, which is completely untrue. It happens in every single class, race, neighborhood. It's just, there's the statistics that's, you know, 1 in 6 kids, and more conservatively, and some say as many as 1 in 4 are going to experience sexual abuse before they turn 18. And so I learned to be that voice, to have the courage to talk about things that are scary and unpleasant. And yet I bring this to surface and I educate, because it's important for people to understand the issue, how big it is, and how we can solve it together.
Yeah, definitely indeed. Definitely indeed. It's a huge problem. Like, it's crazy how that just happens. And the fact that it's 9 times out of 10, usually family as opposed to an outsider too, which is even more disheartening on top of that. So my goodness, it was like with the recovery process, especially sharing a story now out on stage too, because it's kind of hard to recover from. Like, I'm sure there might be some PTSD going on from that whenever it may come up in conversation, possibly.
So I suffered from PTSD in my younger years. And I didn't, you know, when you grow up in Eastern Europe, like, health, mental health is not something that is even discussed. It's like, you don't go to a psychologist unless you're crazy. Basically, that's the attitude. And so I didn't even begin therapy until I came to the US and I was already in my 20s. And then I didn't even know that I had a PTSD and a lot of triggers and all of it until I came across this therapy called EMDR. And that's the therapy that's actually used specifically for PTSD and with a lot of veterans who have come from the combat. But that is a very successful therapy for people who've experienced very traumatic abuse in their childhood. And what it really helped with is separate my trauma from my identity. So what I mean by that, a lot of the time when you experience child sexual abuse specifically, as an adult, you make a lot of unhealthy choices. And that could be alcoholism or drug abuse, promiscuity, wrong choices, just a lot of different things that are driven by your trauma. And so I hear a lot of women who come to me to discuss their lives, and it's the same message. And they say, I don't understand. Why do I keep doing this? Or why do I keep repeating this pattern? And what I have to explain to them is that it's not you, it's your trauma response, and it's your trauma that's dictating what you're doing. And you have to separate your trauma from your identity. And a lot of the times we don't even understand that it is trauma that's dictating your life decision. So I'll give you an example. I did not want to have children most of my life up until like 3 years ago. And it was only during the breakthrough in my therapy when it felt like suddenly like this light was switched. And I went from not ever wanting to be a mother and really logically describing why to basically saying, no, I do want to, like, I want to experience this. Now, I'm not saying this because I believe that every woman has to be a mother at all. Why I'm telling you this story is I didn't realize that my trauma was holding me back from experiencing something so beautiful like motherhood. I logically thought this was my decision, and I justified it in very logical reasons why I don't want to be a mother. And so imagine how deep, how hidden the trauma response can be, and it really can affect your life decisions and life choices. And so I share my message for that reason, that it is so important for every person to go and seek healing and really work through their traumatic experiences, because in their PTSD, because you don't even know what you don't know. You could be making life choices that are completely subconsciously sabotaging your entire life.
Yep. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And that's the beautiful thing about therapy. It's written D, especially the right kind of therapy, indeed. Help you get that right system, change the software in your brain. That's right, indeed. Now she's wired for more growth. You'll love to see it, indeed. So Mama Anderson, huh? That's right, indeed. You'll love to see it. So, my goodness, so what excited about over the next 6 to 12 months? Any big projects folks need to be on the lookout for?
Yes. So, 6 to 12 months, we're working on opening a new chapter for our networking, and then hopefully following with our foundation and doing the mentorship program in that city as well. Definitely looking for partners who want to open chapters in their city. So if there's somebody who's listening and felt compelled, please reach out. We're expanding our mentorship program in Atlanta. So we just actually secured our second partnership with another organization. So we partner with existing homeless shelters to not reinvent the wheel and just partner with people that they're serving and assign mentors to them. And so the goal is to really have every single person who is experiencing homelessness to be paired with a mentor, and for us to really solve this issue for once and for all, because there should not be humans who are made in God's image living under the bridge, not knowing whether they're going to be safe and whether they're going to be able to eat. And so we really truly pray that our program continues to expand and help more people, not just in Atlanta, but in other cities as well.
Yeah, you love to see it, indeed. You love to see it, indeed. You get a mentor. You get a mentor. You get a mentor.
That's right. That's right.
So, my goodness, since you've been on quite a few interviews, is there a question that you wish folks would ask you more often?
Frankly, you asked everything. So you've been such a pleasure to just be interviewed by. Lots of humor, lots of just thoughtful comments and questions. And I was really able to say what I had to share today with your audience. So thank you so much.
Oh, shoot, well, my pleasure indeed. My pleasure indeed. So you're still doing coaching these days too?
I am. So we still, we have a mastermind group that I lead now. And then I'm actually helping people to find what their purpose is. So I'm doing this group coaching where we go through exercises for people to get unstuck in what they're living. Because I ask a lot of people, like, what would you do if you had $300 million sitting in your bank account right now? And like, truly imagine that it's sitting there. And majority of people always answer, I'm going to quit my job. I'm going to do this. I'm going to buy that. And so, and whatever answer it is, it's always about changing what their life is like now. I have yet to meet somebody who I've been coaching who said, oh, I wouldn't change anything. I would just continue doing what I'm doing, but I'm going to do it faster because I have the resources that I need. And so that tells me that majority of people are really stuck not fulfilling what their purpose is if they're wanting to get out of their life circumstances. And so I want to help people to realize, what is it that I truly desire and what is it that I truly meant to do and how can I get there so I can get unstuck from living my life thinking I have to be doing this job 9 to 5 or whatever your answer, it could be work related, it could be you're stuck in an unhappy relationship, whatever that might be. I truly believe once we live the life where we are fulfilling our purpose on this earth, it's such a happiness and joy every day. Like, I would do what I do now just faster. If I had $300 million, I would have all the resources I need to open this program, you know, nationally. So I wouldn't change one thing in my life. And I'm very happy that I got to this point and it was a big journey to get here. So if I can help others to achieve that, then I'm very, very happy.
That's what I'm talking about indeed. That's what I'm talking about indeed. So it sounds like group coaching and masterminding, huh?
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right. That's what I'm talking about indeed. So has there been a coaching client experience that helped you to up your game as a coach? I guess in this case as a facilitator, since it's group coaching.
Yes. So it really depends what resonates with what client, but I've had a lot of people who've heard me talk about silent retreats, who have gone on silent retreats themselves and then had amazing breakthroughs in their lives and personally and in their career. And that's just such an amazing experience to hear that, you know, I was able to inspire somebody to make this change. I've had people who just working through finding really truly what their purpose is. So they now understand that they don't have to live the same way. And they're now working through to find what is it that they're meant to do. And that you can see the happiness level and the excitement in people who are finally like, okay, I don't have to be stuck in this life for the rest of my life. I can change.
Yeah, that's right. You can change indeed. That's right indeed. Ain't just about dimes and quarters, y'all. That's right indeed. You can change. That's right indeed. So, fun question for you. If your fabulous book, Finding Courage to Change, pun intended, in this case, I guess.
Yes.
If that book were a food, what would it be and why?
I think the biggest thing I want to say from my book is that change is possible. And your past or your current circumstances don't have to define your future. And so I want to truly inspire people to know that no matter how dark of circumstances you have been through or you're going through, that you can go through it and you can thrive and you can not just survive, but you can be somebody who thrives and heals and just does good for this world.
So it would basically be a banana?
Yes.
Yeah, so there you go, folks. Bananas give you the courage to change, y'all. That's right, indeed. That's right. You didn't know you were talking to a wonderful lady who wrote a banana today. That's right, indeed. Yep, she wrote it at a silent retreat and then had it edited and polished up. That's right, indeed. And out into the world, get to hear the story. That's right, indeed. And then you put the book to your ear and realize it's a banana. And it's a banana phone. And you're talking to your nana on your banana phone. That's right, indeed. She's like, yay, this book looks very appealing. Man, well, coming down to the magical question every guest gets to receive, and that is it for the wake up tomorrow, and you're 25 again, but you're still in the current year. What advice would you give to yourself?
Keep doing what you're doing.
Ah, you love to see it. I'm sure she's already got $300 million, y'all.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Oh, you'll love to see it. Well, for those who need to keep in contact with you and cop some copies of your magical book, what's the best way for folks to do so, Anna?
You can search for it on Amazon. And then I would love for your audience to also check out our website, because it has all the information, including my book and our program and our networking. And it's cpnworldwide.com.
Woohoo! That's right, indeed. Worldwide, y'all. The whole globe. Nobody's safe. That's right, indeed. Spreading the good word. That's right, indeed. If you're professional and you're Christian, you're freaking in. That's right, indeed. You're in there like swimwear. That's right, indeed. You could be the jelly to the peanut butter, or they could be the peanut butter to your jelly. Either way, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter, indeed. Doesn't matter, indeed. She's got you covered, y'all. She's got you covered like a blanket indeed. So we're going to put a link to all of her goods in the show notes. That way you can check out what she's doing, cops and copies of her books, and check out and keep up with the journey indeed, because she's still just getting started, y'all. That's right indeed. That's right indeed. Well, any parting words before we close up shop?
Just keep doing what you're doing. I think it's an important podcast to allow authors and people who are trying to do good and improve our world, and to be able to share their message with your audience.
If you're hearing this part of the episode, that means you're one cool individual. Thanks a bunch for tuning in, and if you enjoyed what you heard, be sure to share it with at least one other person in your network. Bonus points for three. And be sure to check out the backlog too while you're at it, because there are hundreds of wonderful episodes to choose from as well.